Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton from Stillman & Company from 2 to 6 every day here on 102.5 The Game. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on with us. A lot to get to in a wild weekend of college football over the weekend. We'll start, though, on the Tennessee Volunteers. Caroline, they go on the road, get an overtime win against Pittsburgh, their first ranked win on the road against a top 25 opponent non-conference since 2003 against Miami. So that's a pretty crazy stat in and of itself. What did you think of the Vols on Saturday, and what does that win signify to you for Josh Heupel and company?
To take some words out of Mike Vrabel's mouth, it wasn't pretty, but it was beautiful for the Vols, because it was not a very pretty game. It wasn't a very pretty start for Tennessee. I mean, that was the slowest start that I've seen from the Tennessee offense since Josh Heupel took over. And it looked like Hendon Hooker and company were struggling in that first quarter. I mean, you opened the first drive going three and out, and then that up-tempo offense really started to slow down. And I know that they were probably going like the normal speed of a normal football team, but it looked almost like snail's pace for Tennessee. So I thought, what is going on with this Tennessee team? You know, is it the environment? Is it the Pitt defense that getting to them? Their offensive playmakers weren't necessarily showing out in the first quarter. And then you started to see Hendon Hooker do Hendon Hooker things and find those connections with Cedric Tillman. And that's when they started to kind of get their mojo back, is when you're finding those Hendon Hooker to Cedric Tillman connections. I always say, do what works. And for this Vols offense, that's exactly what works. So they were able to get it done. And I think that's a huge testament to this team, that even though it was a slow start, even though it wasn't probably their cleanest or best 60 minutes of football, 60 minutes plus as it went to overtime, they still found a way to win. And I think that's big for this Josh Heupel team, for this Tennessee team, because that's a huge barometer for where this team really is. Can't go to Pitt and get a win, then I don't know how I feel about your chances in the SEC East. But now that Tennessee has found a way to win, they're able to battle it back after being down at the half. I think that this is a great testament to this Tennessee team. And, hey, it's survive in advance, 2-0, and you got some tough games coming up before to next week.
So do you buy this defense, Caroline, as potentially being significantly better this season?
Significantly better? I don't think I'm ready to go there yet. I saw Tennessee rush the quarterback better than I've seen them since Josh Heupel took over. I mean, you can kind of see two sides of it. They got to the quarterback against Pitt, and I thought that was going to be a key, because that's how West Virginia was able to slow Keaton Slovis and this Pitt offense down, was by putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. I mean, remember, West Virginia was up in that game, and then West Virginia turned the ball over a couple of times, and Pitt was able to capitalize off it. That's how they were able to beat West Virginia. West Virginia slowed Keaton Slovis down by getting to the quarterback, and that's what Tennessee did. I saw them put the pressure on the quarterback more so than I have all season long, or even last season, so that's a good thing. But I'm just not ready to buy that this defense is completely transformed and so much better. I think I've seen some baby steps against Pitt, but once you start going up against, you know, the Alabamas and the Floridas, that's when your defense is really going to be pressured, and that's when your defense is going to have to show out. The Tennessee offense can't do it all themselves, especially with the expectations that Tennessee fans and, you know, even non-Tennessee fans alike have in this Josh Heupel team. So I'm not completely convinced yet. If Tennessee can continue to put pressure on the quarterback against Florida, against some of these SEC teams, then I'll start to, you know, kind of lean that this defense is transformed. But I'm just not quite there yet.
Caroline, the story of week one was Florida and their giant win over Utah, and that set up a massive game in the SEC last week against Kentucky. The Wildcats go on the road, and they take down Florida 26-16, the final score. What did that tell you about Florida and maybe where exactly they are right now? And what did that win for Kentucky tell you about Mark Stoops and the team that he's got this year?
I mean, such a fun game. I think we all expected that to be a fun game, but it really was. They delivered. I think that this shows you that it's going to be a tale of two Anthony Richardsons, that he can go out there and he can throw for almost 200 yards, two interceptions, you know, run for almost, you know, for over 100 yards and get things done on his, with his feet, be incredibly effective, be a playmaker, show those highs and moments like he showed us with that two-point conversion against Utah. He can be that. And then also he can be incredibly limited on the air and on the ground, be sloppy with the football, make dumb mistakes, turn the ball over twice with it in his hands. So I think it's going to be a tale of two Anthony Richardsons, because Florida's success, I think, really ultimately starts and ends with Anthony Richardson. If he can take care of the football, if he can get the ball moving, then they're going to win. If not, then they're going to get beat every single time. So Florida was able to run the ball really well against Utah. They were not able to run the ball effectively against Kentucky. I don't think that Anthony Richardson can win games with the ball in his hands. He's going to have to do it on the ground and in the air. And that's what Kentucky did, was they stopped the run. And that's a huge testament to Mark Stoops. I mean, this was a big test for both teams, for both Kentucky and for Florida. A proven game for Billy Napier to say, okay, you did it against Utah, do it again in the SEC. And also a huge win for Mark Stoops to say, hey, you know, our success, our 10-win season in 2021, that was not a fluke, and we're going to continue to build upon the success that we had in 2021. So I think a huge statement win for Mark Stoops, but also for Florida. You know, you got a first-year head coach. You're going to have bumps along the way. I don't think that this is the end of this Florida team. We saw what they could do against Utah. But I think it ultimately starts and ends with Anthony Richardson. If he can get the ball moving, this Florida team will have some success. But they're going to have bumps in the road. It's a first-year head coach.
All right, Caroline, who's better, the SEC East or the SEC West?
That's a really good question, because there are some atrocities in the SEC West this year. I go SEC East. I mean, you got, obviously, Georgia, who's looking like the better team over Alabama. And then you've got three really, really solid teams in Kentucky, in Tennessee, in Florida, even Vanderbilt holding their own against Wake Forest. I mean, I would say traditionally the SEC West has been just an absolute dogfight, the most difficult league and the most difficult conference in college football. But this year, I give the nod to the SEC East. Auburn is atrocious. Texas A&M just lost to App State and looked awful doing it. Alabama just narrowly beating Texas. I think that Alabama is still a pretty damn good football team, but the SEC West has not looked so hot. So SEC East, you win this week.
Caroline Fenton on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So speaking of Texas A&M, what do you think life's like down there right now for Jimbo Fisher? And what did that loss on Saturday signify to exactly where that program is right now? Obviously, they are not the sixth best team in the country, but what do you think? What do you think this looks like moving forward with Jimbo down there in Texas A&M?
Oh man, I think it's gonna get pretty chippy down there on College Station. I think that the seat for Jimbo Fisher has the heat's been turned up a little bit, even going into this season, because I think a lot of Texas A&M fans were disappointed last year, because even though you beat Alabama, you still go 8-4 and lose a dumb game to LSU that you weren't supposed to lose. So it's like with Texas A&M, it's like they take one step forward and two steps back. And I think these A&M fans are getting tired of it with Jimbo. He's been there for, this is his fourth or fifth season, and now is really put up for shut-up time. They brought in Jimbo Fisher to go to the college football playoff, and they have not made it there yet. They narrowly missed in 2020 with the fifth-best team in the country. But I think Jimbo Fisher needed to do more so far in his tenure, and I think that that loss to App State just signified that he's not the guy to do it. I think that it signified that Jimbo Fisher has been trying way too hard to try and continue to mimic the success that he had in 2014, and he's been trying to search for that for so long that he hasn't been able to adapt to this new style of college football. He's trying to do with Haynes King, Texas A&M quarterback, what he did with Jimbo Fisher, and it's just not working. That style of offense just does not work anymore. So I think the biggest thing with Jimbo Fisher is, okay, can you look at yourself in the mirror and say, we need to change, and we need to adapt, and I'm going to start to just hang up what I had in 2014 and start to adapt and evolve this offense and this team? Or is he going to just drive himself crazy trying to do what just doesn't work anymore? And I think that's ultimately how Jimbo Fisher has a divorce from Texas A&M, is if he's not able to make those changes and evolve that football team. But, I mean, the seat is getting hot for Jimbo Fisher, and it's getting hot fast. Those are not the expectations in College Station.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting with him. I did want to take it beyond the SEC, Caroline, and just get your thoughts on, you know, Nebraska, the whole Scott Frost debacle, which, look, I was surprised, but I think most people were surprised, but I thought he would give them as much a chance as anyone to have success. But that tenure ending, and where you think they should go from here.
I really did, Joe, I'm with you. I wanted that to work out. I liked that story of, you know, a graduate from the program, born and bred a Cornhusker. He comes back to Nebraska to save this program and bring them back into national relevance. And it just didn't work out. And honestly, I thought the Scott Frost experiment lasted way too long in Nebraska. It was about time that Scott Frost needed to leave. I think he stayed three games too long. So it's going to be interesting to see what Nebraska turns to next. Because it's about time that Nebraska's relevant. It's about time that Nebraska starts winning some games. And this is a fan base that has experienced success before, and they want to get back there. I look at Nebraska fans the same way that I look at Tennessee fans. They know what success feels like. And this is a really good program. They just haven't been able to win games. So I think it'll be interesting to see where they turn next. I know they've been looking at Coastal Carolina's head coach, Jamie Chadwell. So who knows? There'll be a lot of names tossed around in that coaching search.
Caroline, tell us about Southeastern Carolines and where people can find that every Saturday.
Heck, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., you can listen to me, Caroline Fenton, on Southeastern Carolines and live every week from 312 Pizza Company, which is the best. It's a really fun pizza place in Germantown. I will give you some stories across the league, kind of my takes on the games of the day, and, of course, my betting picks of the day as well.
Check it out. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow, joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. Caroline, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week, and looking forward to listening to you today at 2.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good one.
Absolutely. You as well. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll take your thoughts on college football and specifically get into the Vols coming up next. They're 2-0. They just got a ranked win on the road. How much do Vols fans believe in this team? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, a big win for the Vols on Saturday. We talked about it yesterday. They go on the road to Pitt, and they take down a top 20 opponent. Tennessee now ranked at number 15 in the AP poll after that win at 2-0. And my question for Tennessee fans is, how much do you believe in this team? They're 2-0. They're riding high. They're a top 15 team in the country right now. Obviously, they have some very challenging games coming up in a couple weeks against Florida, Georgia on the schedule, Alabama on the schedule, LSU on the schedule. You can go up and down the list. So if you're a Tennessee fan out there, and Joe Rexrod, I'll ask you the same question as well. How much do you believe in this team? And what do you think this team, based on two games worth of sample size at this point, can ultimately be as you look forward and try to forecast the rest of the season so far for the Tennessee Volunteers?
Well, that's a good question. I do feel like there's just a lot of calm down, everybody, that you have an impulse to say to Tennessee fans. The emotional swings can get very dramatic, right? And we've seen it before. I think this is a good team. It can be a very good team. You know, they're going to have to – that was a good, huge win. Like Caroline said, like we've talked about, it's a huge win to be as flawed as they were and still win that game on the road against a good team. They're going to have to get a lot better to win some of these other big games coming up. And it's just like, different kinds. Actually, that game probably translates to like the Kentucky game way down the road. That's how I look at Kentucky. Like, they're built, they play D. They want to run the football. They have a very good quarterback. It's a little bit different kind of game than you'll see in some of these other matchups, like against Florida. But you got to build. You got to get better. Like, the offense this week, I think it's important in the half that they're going to play against Akron that they execute better. That they got to sharpen some things up before Florida. The defense, it had a lot of great moments against Pittsburgh, but it is a different challenge against Anthony Richardson and Florida. You just have to, like, right now, this team would not be able to hang. Well, I know what Alabama just looked like last week, but I don't think they'd be able to hang the way that they are playing right now in some of those bigger games. But that's I think it sets up well for them to, keep working, keep getting better. You beat Florida, and all this caution, calm down, it's just going to be ignored anyway. It's just going to be a complete frenzy of excitement.
Joe, I honestly feel better about them after the game Saturday than I thought I would. And from this standpoint, I thought if Tennessee was going to win most of these toss-up games, it's going to come down to the offense. And they did score 34 points on Saturday, and I get all that. 34. If your off day is scoring 34 points against a top 20 opponent, then you'll probably take that. I understand that. But the defense won that game. Make no mistake about it. The defense won that game for Tennessee on Saturday. And quite frankly, I didn't know if we'd see that this year, a defense winning a game for this team. And that's exactly what they did on Saturday. So, in a way, I kind of feel better about Tennessee. They had some struggles offensively. The second half, was rough offensively for Tennessee. Number one, I have a lot of faith in Josh Heupel and Alex Golish to fix some of those problems. Number two, I don't know if they're going to play a defense that plays the game quite like Pittsburgh. Now, they'll play some better defenses. Georgia's a better defense. Alabama's certainly a better defense than Pittsburgh is. So I'm not saying that they're not going to have stiffer challenges than Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh plays the game a pretty unique way defensively based on what else I see. Kentucky looked great defensively on Saturday as well. So there are more challenges ahead. But I feel pretty good about Tennessee's offense and what they have at their disposal in that area. The defense, I thought, was really encouraging on Saturday. Now, again, you have to keep in mind they played against a backup quarterback that couldn't run in the second half. So I am acutely aware of that as well. But I think you should feel pretty good based on what you've seen out of Tennessee the first couple of games. And I think the offense, as it continues to evolve here, it's pretty clear to me through two games. Cedric Tillman, Brew McCoy, and Jalin Hyatt are going to be a problem for people as they move ahead here. And we'll see if Tennessee can get a little bit more out of the running game. I've not been overly impressed with the running game thus far, but the defensive performance on Saturday made me feel better about this Tennessee team. Because I thought there was a chance they could be a lost cause defensively this year.
Yeah, if Tennessee won that game 51-48 and it just happened to like have the ball last, well, look, it'd still be a big win, right? And we'd be saying, hey, well, who knows? Maybe that offense will just have perfect days in some of these huge games coming up, and the defense can force a turnover, or the balls can block a punt or something. I think you saw Saturday, they've got some people who can help you get stops. Byron Young was good last year. He's better. He looked really good.
He did.
And watching that game back too, he's a problem for people. We've talked about Aaron Beasley. I think Aaron Beasley may have been the biggest revelation. Just it's some of these subjective things that are total football cliches. But it's like with Derrick Henry, we're trying to talk about his explosiveness, not his numbers, but just like how explosive he is. With Aaron Beasley, he's the guy who, quote unquote, he just finds the ball. But he just seemed to know where to go, and he can get there quickly. And I feel like that's a big find for them here. And Kamal Haddon. So at each level, I think you you know, that's what they needed. Like, you need to find some people. And I know everybody's all every year. It's like, oh, this freshman, you know, Josephs and Pierce and these guys. And it's like, realistically, actually, I mean, they're pretty for true freshmen. You're seeing a little bit of, but you're not going to get a ton from a true freshman in the SEC.
Right.
Woody Hayes used to say, you get every true freshman you play, there's one extra loss on your schedule that year. That was, of course, the 1960s. But it's more like, do you have a sophomore, junior, third, fourth year guy who takes a big jump? And that's real. You don't get excited about those guys because they've been around and everybody thinks they know what a player is. You know, hasn't done much in 2 years, so who cares? But that's how it works in football, especially if you do have a good culture. And Beasley is just like, it looks like a guy who is just taking a step. Haddon, Dominic Bailey's in there. You know, I think Roman Harrison has gotten better, and that's what you gotta have depth too. You gotta be able to rotate guys, in particular in the front seven if you can. And Heupel talked about that after the game, how important that was just to be able to put in different people. You have a better chance of making winning plays late in the game if you're not playing every single snap.
Michael on the text line says, Florida's a good test in 2 weeks, but let's be honest, the true test this year is having a Catterday showdown. Bo in Murfreesboro on the text line says, from a Vol fan perspective, it seems as if the season itself will hinge on the Florida, LSU, and Kentucky trio of games. If the defense can't stop the run like they did against Pittsburgh, or if the defense can stop the run like they did against Pittsburgh, it could be a really good year for the Vols. If they can keep from getting manhandled in front, 7-9 wins are certainly possible. This from Bo from Murfreesboro on the text line. And we have another texter, Joe, that asked, was beating a team with an injured backup quarterback playing the majority of the game really that impressive?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I don't know how that game goes with Keaton Slovis still in the game. You know, as far as stopping the run, I mean, they didn't stop the run completely. You know, they gave up the huge run, of course. They gave up some big plays. It was far from a perfect day defensively, but they seemed to get better as the game went on. And of course, they made a lot of winning plays too. And look, both of those quarterbacks, they hit hard, and you know, you don't want to hurt anyone, but you know, the defense knocked a quarterback from the game and actually hobbled the other quarterback. Again, no one's trying to hurt anybody, but you're talking about the most quarterback pressure, at least by one measure, in a long time for Tennessee. And that does mean something to me against that offensive line.
We'll continue the conversation on the Vols. We'll also get to Vandy's game against Wake Forest over the weekend as well and go rapid fire. There's some big-time college football topics that took place in a wild weekend of college football in Week 2. All that ahead, this is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up at 7:45. Looking forward to that. Blake Bedingfield coming by at 8 o'clock as well. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, obviously a former scout for the Titans, and get his X's and O's view of what happened specifically in the second half to the Titans and their loss to the Giants on Sunday. So looking forward to that as well. Right now, talking college football, welcoming your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Philip in Murfreesboro says, the Vols may turn out to be a really good team, but let's not overreact to beating a one-legged backup quarterback in an overtime game in which the opposing team missed not one, but two field goals. This is from Phillip in Murfreesboro. I mean, if we want to get into the missed field goals thing, I mean, Tennessee dropped a touchdown pass. We can do that all day. But I understand the backup quarterback part of the argument. I do.
Yeah. No, the field goals certainly were a big factor. So was deciding not to block the outside rusher as a personal protector on the punt team, and so does dropping a touchdown pass and missing a couple passes that could have been touchdowns and muffing a punt and on and on and on. I mean, both sides were filled with mistakes. It was a beautifully flawed college football game.
It was.
Look. It's like yesterday's discussion is a lot different if Randy Bullock makes a kick It just is. And the Vols discussion is a lot different because Trey Flowers came in. They called that blitz, and he completed it, and he made the play, and Hooker hit Tillman, and you made winning plays. That's what it's about. And hopefully we have a lot more games like that where it's not perfect. There's mistakes all over the field. There's plays all over the field, and it comes down to who can make those winning plays when it matters. The fact that the Vols did should not just be dismissed.
Joe, Wake Forest comes into Nashville on Saturday. They get a 45-25 win against Vanderbilt. Sam Hartman looked very good, 300 yards passing, 4 touchdowns through the air. Not a great day for Vanderbilt offensively, particularly with some of the mistakes that were made in that game. It was not a good day from Mike Wright. A.J. Swan comes in the game, goes 8 of 11, 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. What did you make of the way the game transpired for Vanderbilt, and what did you make of the switch at quarterback through the game as well?
Yeah, well, first of all, I thought Vanderbilt's defense deserved better. Eventually, they succumbed and they gave up big plays, and Sam Hartman is a really good player. They got overwhelmed, but actually, I thought they really fought and showed me something in that game. The goal line stand, they were, you know, Vanderbilt's in that game. And then Mike Wright makes the kind of going down on a third down. I think it was a third down. And he just, you know, he just throws into traffic and it comes back the other way. And it's just one of those, like, just trying too much to make a play. Sometimes you just have to eat it. And that changed the game. He had another fumble. He had a rough day all the way around. Wake Forest did a good job. I think you saw in this game, in this matchup, it's not like Wake Forest is the monsters of the Midway, and you saw Vanderbilt's offensive line where things are probably headed against some SEC teams with the struggles, which is another reason, by the way, that to me, like, a quarterback who can escape is necessary, probably, right? I mean, it gives you a chance. Also, on the Mike Wright front, absolutely atrocious officiating.
Bad.
You know, the late hit against Vanderbilt on Hartman. I mean, I know some people were mad about that, but I like that's how they call it. Okay, you came in too late. The play was clearly over. You came in too late and hit a quarterback. That's how they call it. The hit on Mike Wright, which was way worse and late and way over the top in front of the officials. I mean, how often does Clark Lee scream on a sideline?
Not
so
very.
Far, I would say not much. He screamed for a while, and man, he deserved to. That was ridiculous. And that's a, you know, that's a crew. I mean, we talk about Jerome Boger's crew. They're gonna have, I'm sure they'll have some, you know, great film study, as I'm sure they do every week. But that crew needs to be reprimanded for missing that. And not, in this era of trying to protect people, especially quarterbacks, terrible. As far as the QB switch, I think it was the right time of game for that. The game was over. A.J. Swan looked really good. He is a talented freshman. And I understand now that some people are going to run wild with that. And I just, to me, it's not even worth a discussion of an actual quarterback switch. One thing to keep in mind on A.J. Swan, this was the book on him, and I saw it too in the scrimmage and practice. Preseason, the guy throws picks. He's a true freshman. I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to have, so he looked good in this game and basically garbage time. I think he's talented. It's very worth noting that he was recruited by this staff. Mike Wright and Ken Seals were not, but it's early to talk about, you know, a switch. This is a huge week for Mike Wright and this offense against Northern Illinois. And maybe at some point it does become, you start thinking about the future and you have a freshman and that's different. But right now, you know, they've devoted a whole offseason to building an offense around Mike Wright. And I'm very interested to see how he and they respond at Northern Illinois, a chance to get a win and get to 3-1.
Yeah, and a good chance to get a win, get to 3-1 coming up. I mean, this is a game, and we said this going into the game against Wake Forest. You know, think what you will about Hawaii and Elon. The competition was about to go way up against Wake Forest, and it did. I thought there were times where Vanderbilt handled it pretty well, and I thought there were other times when they didn't. You mentioned the line of scrimmage. That's going to continue to be a work of progress for Vanderbilt as they move forward here. You know, I thought you know, Ray Davis ran the ball okay. I mean, they still got some weapons offensively that I feel good about moving forward. But to me, like, Joe, this is a game coming up against Northern Illinois. I think you need to win if you're Vanderbilt. Like, based on what I've seen thus far from Vanderbilt, the overall picture, they should win this game coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. There are not going to be a lot of opportunities left on the schedule to run the football, and I just think Vanderbilt has to run the football with Mike Wright, with Ray Davis. They've got to have an effective running game. There's a lot of SEC defenses that I think are just going to make it really tough on them. There are a couple that I think they will be able to run on or have an opportunity to. This is a game they should run the football effectively. I think it's probably, you know, going to be a higher scoring kind of game. But then again, you never know. By the way, Vanderbilt continues to, you know, I just want to point this out. Vanderbilt 63, Hawaii 10, Michigan 56, Hawaii 10. I'm just saying.
I like it. The transitive property of college football. It never fails.
Right. Vanderbilt, touchdown better than Michigan. I'm just saying.
I do want to point out on the opening lines right now that I'm looking at on FanDuel Sportsbook, Vanderbilt is actually a 2.5-point dog heading into this game on the road at Northern Illinois. I think you might need to look at Vanderbilt in that game, but they're a 2.5-point dog against Northern Illinois. Tennessee, by the way, a 47.5-point favorite against Akron. That's a pretty big line. 47.5 points.
So that one will tip past 50.
I'd say there's a pretty good chance that takes place. We touched on this briefly yesterday. Your thoughts on where Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M go from here? There obviously are huge expectations for this team. They have looked really bad the first 2 weeks. Even the first game, the first half, they did not look good. Defensively, I still think they're a pretty good team. Offensively, they are a mess right now. What do you make of where this goes from here with Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M?
Well, you know, interesting point made by Caroline Fenton earlier. Basically, Jimbo still trying to, you know, run things like he still has Jameis Winston, you know, going back almost 10 years. You know, I don't know if schemes are a problem, but certainly finding a quarterback and just putting together a productive offense with all of that talent on paper that they have is a huge problem. And look, different situation, but I do think a little bit to the last Tennessee staff. And, you know, when it comes down to it, this is also just a fan thing. You'd rather your team have to win games 40-37 than 17-13, right? It's just, it's a bad scene, man. And I think it could get ugly because, look at their schedule. Like, let's talk about a team like Mississippi State right now. I think they'd kick their butt right now.
They might.
Maybe I'm wrong, but that's a pretty good football team. There's a lot of potential L's on that schedule, and if they have like a 7-5 kind of year, what the heck does that mean for Jimbo? I mean, at what point does it really get to be a problem for him?
It's going to be very, very interesting to watch. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. We'll get his rant of the day. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rexrode, here on ESPN, 102.5, The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Here comes the sun. And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rexrode. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexrode, I turn things over to you.
I've been waiting all day for this.
I know you have.
So I'll just tell you about my night last night. I was having a fine Monday. I got to, as a parent, you get to see some kids play their sports. You know, my daughter, a nice tennis match. You fought hard, a tough loss. My son, middle child, played a real good football, JV football game, made some plays, brought some energy to the sideline. Tough loss, but good team effort, really fought. It was a felt good afterward. Like, it was encouraging, and it was fun. And of course, now after that, more fun. Robbie and Rexrode Fantasy League. I'm playing against him. So, it's, hey, let's go come home after the game, talk about the game, get some pizza, watch the end of the game, have a nice night. And hey, look at this. All I need is Russell Wilson, get a few more points, and I come back to win in fantasy football. And he's right there on the verge, just a few more completions. I mean, yeah, a touchdown pass, it's a gimme. Either way, it's fun, and it's sitting there watching the end of the game, and oh man, this is good stuff. Here come the Broncos down to Seattle. It's actually a really, really good game. Geno Smith's having a good game. I wasn't sure this would be a good game, but here it is. It's the NFL, and here comes Russell Wilson, the Broncos. A minute 11 on the clock, 3rd and 14 at their own 45-yard line. Wilson hits Javonte Williams, gets 9. You're 4th and 5. That was, 4th and 5. You're at the Seattle 46. There's 56 seconds left. You have all three of your timeouts, Nathaniel Hackett, in your first game as a team's head coach. So this is where I didn't see this until later because I was watching the regular broadcast. So Peyton Manning is like, I love the Manning cast. I got to get back into it. I didn't even think about the Manning cast. And then I saw this clip later. And the Manning cast is great. And, Peyton Manning is other than like Peyton Manning talking about his idiot kicker, a drunk idiot kicker a long time ago, Mike Vanderjagt,
an all-time great NFL right? moment. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like yelling at a teammate sometimes on the sideline. Like Peyton Manning never says any bad or critical about anyone, right? He's everybody's friend. Everybody loves him. And on those Manning casts, it's great. He gets into the nitty gritty of the schemes and everything, and just the playing the quarterback position. Here, let me just emulate, if you haven't seen Peyton Manning on that situation for the next few seconds. While by the way, Shannon Sharp, Broncos great, is sitting there too.
Yeah,
call timeout. Call timeout. You gotta call timeout. I mean, and finally, he just puts his hands on his head, like, what is happening?
Joe, dude. I think we have the clip that we can play from Peyton Manning, if you would like.
That'd be great.
Nick, let's play that clip from Peyton Manning last night in this broadcast.
They're going to kick it.
Kick what?
Are they going to kick? They're kicking it right here?
Kicking the field goal right here.
Hold on. That's after.
Let me see how far this
62
is.
62-yarder.
That was Peyton Manning last night in the Manning cast.
So that's after. Yeah. So yes. So you let the clock go all the way down. And then the quarterback you gave up 5 draft picks and 3 players to acquire, who threw for 340 yards, completed 70% of his passes. You took him off the field to try the second longest field goal in NFL history.
Oh, man.
Are you freaking kidding me? That is some of the worst coaching I've ever seen in my life. How could you possibly not call a timeout, not talk about it, give yourself options, and instead let it run down and say, nah. Yeah, we're good. Brandon McManus, who's 1 for 8. He has hit a 60-yarder, but he's 1 for 8 in his career.
That go ahead is and send him blinking fertilizer.
I mean, Pete Carroll, who is also like Peyton Manning, like the nicest guy who never says anything bad. Here's his quote. Man, I was surprised they took Russ out there at the end. But we're fortunate there. I mean, are you kidding me? That is absolutely coaching malpractice. Like, I'm not sure I've seen. I can't actually remember a worse example of coaching in my life. and it just ruined my entire night. And yes, losing to my kid in fantasy football stinks. That was a tough one. Tough L.
It was amazing.
Beyond that, just like, what are we doing here? I cannot make sense of this. And this is a quote from Hackett. Well, quote, for me during that time, we've been moving it slightly. We're moving it with big chunks. We just given up a sack right before that. So I wanted to make sure we took a chance. We had a chance. Call a timeout and see if Russell Wilson can get you 5 freaking yards. You don't think he can play a pass for 5 yards with 56 seconds left? Are you kidding me? You just gave up a sack. He threw for 340 freaking yards in the game.
4th and 5, 64-yard field goal. Look, I love Nathaniel Hackett. Nice Packers offensive coordinator. Didn't call any plays, but nice Packers offensive coordinator. It was atrocious. I actually thought of, and obviously the stakes nowhere near as high, I thought of Pete Carroll. I thought of the deciding to throw the ball with Russell Wilson instead of handing it to Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl. Like, it was bad. Obviously, the stakes are nowhere near the same, but it was a worse decision. Like, it's 4th and 5. It's a 64-yard field goal. Let's just play percentages. What do you have a better chance of doing? Making the 64-yard field goal or converting on 4th and 5 with Russell Wilson, who, by the way, not only did you give up all those draft picks for, you also just paid him like $250 freaking million dollars in contract extension that you gave him a few weeks ago. It's just amazing.
Why is that on me?
I hate this stuff, but I'm gonna go ahead and do it. Like, fire Nathaniel Hackett right now.
Wow.
Just fire him. I want him fired. Ever fire everybody. I'm not watching football ever again. Okay, maybe that's a little far. It's mind boggling.
What do you think was going through Russell Wilson's mind?
Well, Russell, probably the right play, right? It's like your first game with a new coach.
Right.
Here's his quote. Quote, I believe in Coach Hackett. I believe in what we're doing. Anytime you can try to make a play on 4th and 5, that's great too. I don't think it was the wrong decision. If we were in that situation again, I wouldn't doubt what he decided. End quote.
Thanks, Russ.
Now, I mean, you know, 6 of 1, half dozen the other. Try to make the second longest field goal in NFL history, or I think I could complete a pass for 5 yards. I don't know. Whatever.
I will also say this. Had they been in Denver, I might be a little bit more accepting of the decision. You know, it's the mountain air, baby. Those balls fly a little farther up there in Denver. But you're not at Mile High. You're in Seattle. You're not making a 64-yard field goal. Sorry.
Are we sure Hackett knows he wasn't in Denver?
I don't know. Hey, what'd you think of Seattle fans booing Russell Wilson as he ran out on the field? I loved it. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, to me, it's like, how many Super Bowls do you guys have and who brought you one?
Yeah. But
whatever. That's how it goes.
The
chorus of boos for Nathaniel Hackett at his home debut better be just as loud.
615-737-1025. Potentially my favorite Rex rant of all time. 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Blake Bedingfield from PaulKaharsky.com. We'll give his thoughts on the Titans game against the Giants. What went wrong for the Titans in the second half? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.